I'm Brian Alcoholic.
I'm
really grateful to be here tonight. If anyone, I'm going to sit here. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. There's a stage behind me, so if it's stand or be up there, I don't know. But with an ego like mine, this is cool to have this for me, you know. I don't know if it's for everybody, but I tell myself it's for me, you know. But basically, you know, if anyone didn't get a ship for a 30-day or 60 or 90, you know, welcome if you didn't want to pick one up. You know, the newcomer especially, you know, that's the most important in the room for me. Tell me, you know, it's not working out there. And I got to keep that, you know, foremost in my head that it doesn't work out there. And that's why the newcomer is the most important to me, you know. I don't know. I'm grateful to be here and to be asked to actually come and speak. I haven't done this in a long time, so I'm probably going to turn bright red and stutter a lot. But, you know, I got to get back on my feet and do these things again. I haven't spoken in over 3 years. And we just moved here from Orange County, and we've been here for about a year and a half now. And I'm still trying to get used to the way the meetings are different, you know, because these alcoholics, they can't do meetings the same anywhere. You know, everybody's got to do it different, or not clap, or not raise your hand, or throw peanuts in a jar. I mean, I've seen so many damn different ways of doing a meeting. But, you know, basically the message is all the same, and that's what keeps me coming back. You know, everybody has the same want to stay sober. But, you know, basically, you know, I didn't grow up, I don't have any a reason for the way I started drinking or the way I started acting. You know, I grew up in an average family. My parents didn't drink and use. I mean, my parents drank, but they didn't beat me. I was never neglected. You know, there was always a Christmas, a birthday, you know, all that. My parents are still together to this day. But all I can remember is from right from the gate was that, you know, I always felt indifferent than everybody else. If it was from, you know, playing AYSO soccer, I always felt like I didn't fit in. I wasn't, you know, fast or cool or funny or like all the other kids. You know, I always had that, you know, inside, and I always saw that. And from the earliest, before I started drinking, I tried to just start hating on people. And that's what I ran with before I started drinking, you know. If I felt indifferent, I just disliked you, and I find every reason possible to be unlike you and go with that, you know. And I did that for a long time. I started drinking maybe in, I don't know, maybe 6th or 7th grade or something, you know. We started smoking cigarettes, and we started stealing whiskey from our parents' cabinet, and you know, it was on. I remember that first drink, you know, that warm feeling that started in my mouth and went down into my chest, and all of a sudden, you know, I had arrived, you know, and I felt, you know, stronger, you know, better looking, just as funny, just as fast, you know, all those things that I was indifferent about, you know, I didn't feel like that anymore after just taking that drink, you know, and I finally figured it out, you know, that's what I needed, you know, maybe I needed that, you know, and I just started drinking, you know. I couldn't drink too much in sixth grade because I couldn't buy it, and after watering down our parents' liquor enough times, you know, they caught on. And, you know, and it was done. You know, they were locking it up, and next thing you know, we're trying to go to the next friend's house that parents didn't lock up their liquor cabinet, you know. There wasn't much to be said about being that young, you know. As I got older and as it progressed, you know, for me, alcoholic is a various thing. It's just an ism. It's by itself in me. It didn't matter what I drank or used, or it's all the same to me, you know. So when I'm talking about alcoholism, I'm talking about everything, you know. If anyone just doesn't only drink, you know. But as I got older, 7th and 8th grade, you know, we started smoking weed and drinking more. I mean, everything came with alcohol. It didn't. Everything started with alcohol, and then it progressed from there. You know, that's my gateway, if you want to call it. And so it started with that, and started drinking and smoking weed and doing blow, and you know, and that's how we went. You know, we wanted to be like the older kids that were down the street. They had the cars, the girls, and we wanted to do what they did. So we just kind of mirrored everything they did, just to a lower level because we were kids, you know. But that's what I had to do, you know. I wanted to be with that group and be like them, so I emulated them the best I could, you know. And started skipping school. I started doing more drugs, started drinking heavier, and started getting in trouble. We stole a car. We were stealing stuff out of mailboxes. And just, you know, for me, it wasn't a big deal because everybody around me, I hung out with that group, you know. And so for me, it wasn't as bad as it was for my brothers to watch, you know. And they were doing it, and they were just like me, you know. And every time we got in trouble, we figured it was them. It was the police. It was our parents. It was society as a whole. You know, they were against us because we were all doing the same thing. Everybody's just against us, you know. And I used to run with that a lot, you know. I just figured they didn't understand me, you know. I'm not a bad kid, you know. I just screw up every now and then. But the drinking got more and more, and the drugs got more and more. And my story goes, I don't really put much down. without picking something up. You know, if I stopped drinking, it was because I was doing this, or if I put that down, it was because I started drinking even more, you know, and I always dabbled in something. And through high school, it was the same way. I kept going to juvenile hall. They kept threatening me they were going to take me away and this, and it didn't really matter to me at that point. At a really young age, I just got the, you know, the fuck it. I'm going to try not to cuss. That's my thing right now. I'm trying to learn to speak without having to cuss, you know, every sentence, you know. But, you know, I got a lot of those, and I don't know, it just didn't work. I didn't care as a kid, and you know, the consequences weren't enough to really affect me, you know. I didn't care, you know. And so that's how high school went. You know, I ended up calling in a bomb threat at school, thinking that would be a cool way to get everybody out of class, you know. And this was in 89 or whatever it was, and you know, it's taken a lot more serious today than it was back then, but we got expelled and arrested and, you know, the whole works, and it was just a joke is what it was, and that really sent me over the edge. So I was just about 18 years of age, so I was like, you know what, screw you, you know, if you guys can't take a joke and you're just going to keep sending everything on me, you know, poor me, poor me, poor me. So that led me on to pretty much lining my family up and going by one and telling them off. And, you know, I'm almost 18. I'm a man now, and I can do what I want, and I can go here, and I can get a job. You know, I had all these grandiose plans of what I was going to do. And I watched a lot of Miami Vice when I was a kid, you know. And what I liked about that show were the bad guys, because they had the boats and the women and the cars, and, you know, they had that great lifestyle that I always wanted, you know. And that's what I tried to be, you know. And I never made it anywhere, you know. I mean, God, it was just funny. You know, I was going to transfer drugs. That was my whole thing, you know, and I never did a thing, you know, but I thought I was, you know, the big baller. And, you know, basically I got caught up with the wrong people because, you know, I was trying to be something I wasn't, you know, and I got in trouble for a burglary when I was 18. And I picked up 3 strikes on that on my first time. And you know, all of a sudden I thought I, you know, was the big time, you know. And I don't know. For me, I just got me to do drugs a different way, and I mean, we got alcohol, you know, and I kept drinking. It didn't matter, you know, for me. I had preachers tell me, I had parents tell me, people write me, tell me, you know, you need to clean up your life. You know, this is a good opportunity, and, you know, it just wasn't there yet. It wasn't bad enough, and the same people I grew up with were with me, you know. So once again, I was with the same people, and it was society. It wasn't me, you know. I told them I was a drunk. I was an addict, you know, and that's why I did all these things, you know. But basically, you know, it took a long time of in and out of recovery homes and jails and detoxes, and it was the same thing every time. I sat, not saying anything to people sitting in the back, but I sat in the back of the room, and my character assassinated everybody I went to, every meeting I went to. There's no way that guy's talking about what he did and where he's at now and how much love he has in his life and God in his life and all these things, you know, so. I just sat around the rooms, you know. I found the guy that thought like me, and I thought he'd be my sponsor. It didn't matter if he had less time or more time or whatever. He thought like me, so we obviously, you know, hit it off. So, you know, I went with that, and I kept wondering why I kept getting drunk, And once again, I just thought it wouldn't work for me. And that went on for years. And once again, it was in detox after detox, you know. And finally, you know, they talk about when the student's ready, the teacher will appear, or whatever. And I ended up in a detox and recovery home, and this was down in Newport Beach. You know, this was the first time I really thought I was going to give it a shot. And you know, I sat there, and you know, I was chasing her, and so I did that. And, you know, that worked for a short amount of time, but you know, it was the same game. It was the same stuff I kept doing. Sitting in the back, character assassinating, didn't want to listen, didn't want to get a sponsor, didn't want to do what they told me in the book, you know, and I got drunk again, you know, and it just kept going, you know, but I planted that seed, you know. They talk about planting seeds around here. If you're not ready, you know, you're going to learn something. You know, I heard a lot of things when I was, you know, 16, 17 years old that came to me this time when I got sober, you know, and it took that long for me to understand what that guy was talking about, but he planted that seed. Every time I got in trouble, I knew AA would help me. Because I figured it was one of their steps, you know, they had to help me, you know, I was there, and they were there to help me, you know, and I relied on them. Every time I was in a gym, I could call the 800 number, and they'd tell me where a meeting was, and there's someone you can hustle for a ride or cigarettes or a bed to sleep in, you know. And but finally, you know, it just kept getting worse and worse, and they talk about that around here, you know. And And that's exactly what happened to me, you know. By all means, I didn't care if I lived or died, and that's just how I did it, you know. I wasn't no badass or anything like that. I just didn't care, you know, and that's what it brought to me, you know. Finally, at 27, I got into another a detox and ended up at a place called Casa del Cerro down in towards San Clemente. And I got into this place thinking it was going to be, you know, my ideas are pretty far out there. I thought this detox was going to be like Baywatch or something because it was in San Clemente, you know. And I was running in Santa Ana and Anaheim and all these places, so San Clemente just sounded great, whatever part of it, you know. And this detox was, I think I got loaded in nicer places than this place, you know. I mean, it was tore up, and it was a real detox. You know, there's people shaking and baking in every room, and that's where I ended up. And luckily, that was the first time I was able to shut my mouth and listen to what people were saying. You know, they had a guy come in and did an orientation for everybody. His name was Dr. Flood, and I have not a single thing in common with the guy, but he sat down and he read the first 164 pages out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and half of it I didn't get, and the other half I could understand. And then, you know, I started seeing myself in these pages and what he was saying. And this guy, I mean, there's no reason we should be talking ever, you know. And this guy's telling my story to me, you know. And it really grabbed me, and I was able to listen at that time. You know, and it was a 7-day detox. He sat there and just got the program. He had no visitors, no phone. He got to eat, read the book. Counselors would come in and read the book. It wasn't really counselors, more like volunteers. But, and that's what they did, you know, and they placed me into a recovery home after that. But another thing that opened my eyes for once, you know, I've seen these things before, but I had a guy in there that came in, and he was in his 60s, and, he passed out on the beach, and, he got like a third-degree burn on his body because he just had shorts on, and he passed out all day, and, he had to go to the hospital. Then they took him to a detox to release him. And he was my roommate, you know, so I was taking care of him for a few days, and then one night, you know, he had to go. He had to drink. You know, this guy I had to take in a wheelchair to eat was able to climb over my bed, out my window, and out because that desire was so strong for him to drink that, it, you know, you can do some amazing things. But, you know, that opened my eyes as well. Finally, you know, I got to a recovery home, and, you know, they gave me a list of rules and regulations there. I mean, down south there's recovery homes, and there's probably 5 or 6 in every city. I mean, they're everywhere. And so getting into one, you know, you got to... You sign these rules that you're going to follow the rules, you're going to get a job, you're going to get a sponsor, you're going to work the steps, and you're going to go to work, you're not going to steal. I mean, it's just this big list of rules, and you're signing this contract with them, and, you know, so I lied and signed it because I was trying to find her or any way out of this next situation, you know, and so I got there, you know, and once again, I was wondering if this was going to be it or if I was just going to go on the run again, you know, and basically, a guy came in, he sat me down, he told me he was going to be my sponsor, you know, and so I figured, you know, there's one thing off my list, this guy's going to tell me he's my sponsor, so, you know, he's going to probably give me cigarettes, and he's going to probably take me out to meetings and introduce me to people, and I wasn't furthest from the truth, you know, he showed up with a book, and this guy, he lived in Riverside and drove into Orange County a couple nights a week to read the book with me, you know, and that showed me a lot, but this guy was going out of his way to show me, and I have no reason, you know, why would you come and show me anything, you know, and this guy was doing that for me, you know, and he proceeded to tell me the truth about myself, regardless how I felt, you know, and not a lot of people have ever done that, you know, some people have, but, you know, I sure as hell wasn't going to listen to him again, but this time, he opened my eyes to how all my bridges were burnt. There's no one left around, there's no family, there's no wife, there's no girlfriend, there's nothing, you know, there's me, the clothes on my back. And he explained to me what an indigent recovery home was. And that means I can't clothe myself, bathe myself, feed myself. You know, I'm pretty much relying on getting loaded, going to jail, or living in someone's garage that only takes care of you for a few days before you got to get out of there, you know. And, you know, with nowhere to go, you know, that puts me in a good position to start listening to what somebody might have to say, you know. And I started doing that, you know. He took me to meetings. And they told me to get my hand up regardless if I had anything to share. I had a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. We got down to detox. Started working with alcoholics, you know, right from the gate, you know. And I didn't feel like it. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know anything. And the guy said, tell them how long you've been sober and how you did it. You know, and that's how it started, you know, that easy, you know. And it was that easy, but it was that hard, you know. We got into memorizing shit out of the big book, you know, 3rd-step prayers, 7th-step prayers, saying that I'll be done throughout the day, you know, just as it's outlined in the first 164 pages. And everybody that I started running with then was into the book. You know, I got into that pack they talked about. I was always in a pack out there, understand I had to do that in here, you know. And I got with those people that were going to meetings, you know. They told me, you know, watch the smoking and joking in the recovery homes. Those guys are going to go back to prison. They're going to go back to the street, and they're going to keep getting loaded, you know. So I started watching that, and that's where everybody started going again. So I got with those guys, the people I thought were lambs in the recovery homes, you know, the guys that were opening up books and reading it, you know. And so I started doing that, and, you know, it was my first introduction to blind faith. You know, I didn't know anything about it, but, you know, they explained it to me. You know, if you don't know anything about brakes in your car and you go to the stoplight and you apply your brakes, that's pretty much blind faith if you don't know how brakes work. You know, you're hoping that you think they're going to work, you know, and you have faith that they're going to work, but you don't know how it works, you know. And that's how it was in this program. I didn't know. And people kept telling me it will, and you just got to believe, you know. And so that's what I ran with, you know. I don't know. It took me a long time to come around to everywhere I went was, you know, we got loaded there, or this happened there, or this, you know, all negative things, you know. And little things started happening, like I went to a meeting there, or we went to a speaker meeting over there, or, you know, I met my sponsor over there, you know. And I don't know, it might sound weird, but to me, it's real big for me, because everything was had something tied to it, you know. We got arrested there, or we got chased out of there, or this and that, you know. And now it's like I got to go to a meeting over there, or I met a sponsee over there, you know, that. And you know, that's a lot for me, you know, and starting to like myself when I saw myself in the mirror, you know. My whole life I never liked who I was, and that's how I, you know, put it on to everybody else, you know. And I don't know, I just kept doing this thing, and they told me to treasure away to happy destiny, and that's what I've been doing, you know. I've been sober since July 19th of 99, and I don't know, I haven't found it necessary to drink or use since, you know. I got this program of action that's outlined in the first 164, and that's, you know, the most I can say is the first 164, they told me to stay the hell out of the back of the book. They said, you got your own story. He goes, you don't need to scrap somebody else's story. He goes, stay in the first 64. That's where it's outlined. That's where it's action, you know. And that's all I've had to do. I never got into other books. They told me to stay away from churches, you know. They said, they're not coming in here bugging you. You know, why are you going there, you know. And that's just where I was at that time. Now it's a little different. But, you know, when you're new, they told me to stay in the book. And that's all I did. And, you know, a group of friends grew up around me, and they're the ones that I can count on today. You know, they might be 200-300 miles away, but they will still tell me the truth regardless, you know, if I'm willing to call them and ask and tell them what's going on in my life. I can't seclude myself anymore and think I'm special or different, or, you know, alcoholic addict, or I'm duly diagnosed and all that shit. You know, I mean, for me, that's $2 in the basket. That's all it means to me, you know. I mean, it's a dog, German Shepherd. It doesn't matter what kind of dog you are, you're still a dog, you know. And that's how it was put to me, and that's how it made sense. You know, it might be lame to others, but that's how it, you know, I'm of the educational variety they talk about. You know, I didn't get here. God didn't come and touch me when I got into that recovery moment. I got it, you know. I've been through trials and tribulations this whole trip, and that's how I learn. I learn from my mistakes, you know, and I don't have to drink or use no matter what, you know. I had a warrant when I came in. I went and took care of that, you know. Usually it's catch me if you can, you know. And I went and dropped off right at the main jail and handled it. It's no big deal. It is when you're sober, you know, because you got a little taste of freedom for a little bit, you know. But there's nothing you can't walk through, you know, and that's what I've learned. But I don't know. They told me I was going to have to find a God, and that was no big deal because I didn't have too many prejudices against that. You know, I've been blaming God for a long time, but didn't know why. It just seemed convenient. So the God of my understanding was pretty simple. You know, he's always been there. And my God is, you know, he loves me enough that he'll let me suffer to find him. And that's all it was. You know, they told me God won't come into a dirty home. And that's where these 12 steps come into play, you know, to clean up your life. And today, it's all on spiritual maintenance. I mean, what can I do? You know, I got to get him here. When I was asked to speak, I didn't know if I wanted to, but I said yes, because that's what I was told in the beginning. You can't deny an AA request. And, you know, and then they told me, you know, the only one at a speaker meeting that stays sober is the speaker, you know. And, you know, just funny shit you hear around these rooms. I mean, funny things, you know. At new, I understood that when you were new, you didn't need to be in too many speaker meetings. They wanted you to be in a book study or an open meeting where you can raise your hand and share or whatever. But nowadays, you know, I understand some of the things they said. But I use that book as like a, kind of like a bullshit filter, you know, because I can sit here and tell you all kinds of crap, but if I can't show you in the book where it is, then it's just my opinion. And my opinion obviously got me drunk and loaded till I was 27, you know. And so I just try to keep it out of the book and as simple as I can, you know. The ABCs, we're real smart, you know. Sometimes we're too smart for this program, and I've seen that. But I don't know. There's no reason anyone can't get this thing. It just depends on what you want to do about it. You know, do you want to get into action? Do you want to get that commitment? Do you want to read the book? And this program's nothing but action. You know, they told me it's like a trash can full of brooms, you know, with a free sign on it. You know, no one wants a free broom because there's nothing but action involved in a broom. You know what I mean? It's the same thing with this program. You know, if you're not doing this and into action, it's just an inspirational book. Go read Sports Illustrated. You know, and that's what they told me, and I ran with that. You know, I mean, I don't know. I just did what other people did before me that had a life that I wanted. And today, it's truly a miracle that I'm able to sit here today and be able to live the life that I thought forever I'd never deserve. But that's crazy. But I don't know. Now we've left our home group. I have a home group in Garden Grove. It's a Saturday morning open meeting, and that was my home group for a long time. And that's what I did, you know. And I just keep stretching along the road of happy destiny, you know. It's I don't think there's a spot I'm ever going to get to that, you know, if you keep improving on everything, it's going to change. It's going to continue to change. And I don't know, I'm kind of lost for words now, so.